Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 19. Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 19, Episode 8. I can't believe we're already looking at our penultimate episode being next week for Season 19. Now, to address an elephant in the room that many of you have picked up, there was no Episode 6. I just need to be clear, there indeed was an Episode 6. But you may recall a few seasons ago, there was a bit of legal trouble, shall we say, that the show got into regarding episodes allegedly defaming a place that is still an up and running business. And in a nutshell, we basically read out a listener experience from this person visiting that place. Apparently, that wasn't seen as good advertising, and we were asked legally to remove it. Basically, Episode 6 has encountered the same fate. Because ever since that moment, I have a legal representative that I will send episodes to before I release them, and just make sure I don't get in the same sort of sticky situation again. And for Episode 6, I was told before I hit release to not release. Now, sadly, I had nothing else to release that day other than the pre-recorded Episode 7. Now, 3 amends have been made to that episode, and I'm waiting on clearance in order to be able to release it. But if I do so, it will be as a bonus because I've decided to move on with the season as I would have normally. So there is definitely a slim chance this season will still contain 10 episodes as it was intended to. However, it may also go down in history as the season with 9 episodes. And let's hope that doesn't happen, as we've had that happen once before. But enough about that, I need to raise attention to just how excited I am about upcoming season 20. Because it's a season of hellos and goodbyes, a season which is going to see a lot of change, but all for the better and all off your recommendations. So, as I've always said, this is your show. The show is in constant flux due to your recommendations about how it can improve for you as the listener, and how it can improve for people who submit experiences. And all of those things have been taken into account, so that with Season 20 we can give you still our standard experience of amazing experiences from you. But when we hit that Season 21, although arguably it may not be named Season 21, there will be changes. Although I don't want anyone to think we're going to fundamentally change the basics of the show, think of it more as a major spring clean than as a redesign of the property, so to speak. And of course, from Season 20 onwards, we'll be investigating different ways in the video landscape for you to consume the dark paranormal. But a lot of those things are still being tested, so I won't say too much about them. What I will say is that with the end of this season coming up, it's now the perfect time to join our wonderful team and community over on Patreon. I mentioned it last week because it's the truth. When you join our Patreon, you are more like a co-creator or co-producer of the show than a standard Patreon of a podcast. Your suggestions are listened to, and the community itself is warm, embracing, and genuinely the nicest paranormal space online anywhere. And it's funny thinking about it, I used to plug our Patreon with the fact you're joining that community at the end of the pitch, so to speak. Now it's at the forefront where it should be. And on top of that, not only is everything on this main feed ad-free, you also receive it before everyone else. Yes, that includes finales, debuts, even the video version of Dark Realms, which we've now started putting out on YouTube. And on top of that, you can also gain access to the full back catalogue of the Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. In Dark Bites, each and every Sunday of the year, we spend 30 minutes taking a look at some of the shorter experiences that we've received. And as our Patreons will tell you, it's my favourite show I produce because I learn something new about the paranormal, be it an idea or theory, every single week. Plus, there's over 100 hours of back catalogue episodes for you to binge through. So, if joining a community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts who haven't got time for hierarchies on forums, etc., sounds like your cup of tea, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal, just like the following wonderful new team members have. Michael, Amy Corral, Jonah Feltman, Ruth, Sammy, Leon, Brian Ridger, Brisengeld, Alex, Chloe's Cuz, Crystal McKinn, Mary Malcolm Sanders, Tina Kelman, Caravello, Stacey Tabor, Brooke Marbert, Barbara Murphy, Julie Rimmer Hunt, Salimbo 4571, Brandon, Julie Whitehouse, Stephanie Backash, Nat, Amanda MP, and Krista. Thank you so much, guys. Your support means that you're supporting independent creators who are looking to move to next levels. And that's exactly what we're trying to do for your show with your help. So come on, guys, if you'd like to join in, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time. Lower those lights, make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door as we listen to Psychic Gifts, Shadow People, and Portals. This is a collection of some of the things that have happened to me with ghosts. I wanted to share my experiences in case anyone else out there is realizing they have abilities, and also because I've really enjoyed hearing everyone else's accounts. Out of respect, I'll be changing most of the names in my stories. Being able to pick up on the supernatural runs in my family, but none of my relatives told me of their experiences until I came to them with mine, which made learning about these abilities early on much harder. My mum, both of her parents, and her paternal grandmother all have or had some combinations of the clairs, mainly clairvoyance, claircognizance, and clairsentience. Mine are mostly these three too. My first psychic memory happened when I was 4. My mum walked in my room and said that she had something to tell me. I looked directly at her and said, "I know, great-grandma died." I remember wondering why she didn't know I knew. As cliche as it is, I had a near-death experience at 14. I was hospitalized with a severe infection which was resistant to antibiotics. I didn't find out until I was in my 30s just how much danger I'd been in. The doctors told my parents it would have been better to not scare me and try to use the placebo effect to their advantage. I made a full recovery. However, in the months after this ordeal, my abilities ramped up. Some of it was ghost-related, but mostly dream premonitions and other predictions. It's funny to look back on now because at the time, I thought it was because I'd started meditating for a month. What can I say? I was 14. The first place I lived after my mum's house turned out to be ridiculously haunted. Knowing what I know now, I couldn't live there. The only way I did was because I really didn't understand what I was dealing with. I feel bad for the kids currently living there. You're so focused on school and just being young, but at the same time you're dealing with these confusing, scary situations that are really taxing. It was the late 90s, I was 18, and I moved out for art college. My school's dorm wasn't the usual tiny rooms and communal bathrooms. It was a large hotel from the early 20s. At some point, it had been converted into a retirement home. Then, sometime in the 80s or early 90s, the school had bought it. Instead of making the seniors move, they were all welcome to stay as long as they liked. By the time I got there, there was only one lady from the retirement home days living there. Being in the Great Lakes region, the walls of this building were like a tank, making the units feel very insulated and private. As weird as it is imagining a retirement home slash dorm, it worked out really well. Forgive me for this cringe part because it will sound like the beginning of an 80s horror movie, but it's genuinely what happened. Our orientation was probably like every other one, but this one ended with what I thought was our classmates trying to scare the freshmen. We were told, flat out, not to bring a Ouija board into the dorms. The guy doing the orientation went on to say, "My friends and I thought it would be fun, but when we asked for a sign, it sounded like a shotgun went off in my room. My roommate and I looked at each other, not believing a single word of it, even making faces. That week, I just went into my bathroom to take a shower, and I clearly heard somebody call my name close to me. I called out, expecting someone to answer. No one did. I walked out and no one was home. I found out later when I asked. They'd all gone out after I went to my room. I had a drafting table with a light where I'd do my homework. About a month later, I was home alone one night, drawing a paper for class. And I noticed what looked to be a shadow, like smoke, began to fill the light bulb. It was weird. I'd never seen it like that. And as I stared, it popped, sending glass all over the table and me, not only leaving me in total darkness, but also darkness with shards of glass, which at the time was just annoying. I told myself it was just a bad bulb and I got a new one. The building had radiators, which meant that it was 80 degrees in the winter, and we were usually in summer clothes. I was home alone doing homework in the living room at night, and I heard the front doorknob turning back and forth. This was the weekend, and I just thought someone was drunk and at the wrong apartment. My stomach is sinking just remembering this, because the front door stopped. Then I heard the coat-closet doorknob inside my apartment start doing the same thing. The worst part was I couldn't see into the foyer, and there was no way I was going to check it out. It felt like it went on forever, and all I could think was, oh my God, I don't want to see a ghost. And then it happened. I felt a cold breeze go past me, into the kitchen behind me. And you guessed it, now the pantry door on the other side of the wall from me is being turned. I was just frozen. I felt nauseous and glad I couldn't see it. Eventually, it stopped. So I took my chance to grab my things and stay at my boyfriend's that night. After these experiences, I started asking other friends in the building if any of them had weird things happen. And a lot had. My neighbor's CD player would turn on by itself and go to the same song in the middle of the CD. Play that song and turn off. If you've ever had a CD player, you know. A person would have had to do all that. Even if it somehow had a glitch and turned on, the rest would be impossible. A friend and his roommate in the back tower, I was in the front, which I later found out was considered less haunted, they were seeing shadow people in their place all the time. They were annoyed by it, and they'd invite people over to see it for themselves. This wasn't, ooh, come and have a look at this. This was more like, come and look at this shit, and I've got a load of work I need to get done, and I'm dealing with these bloody things. Someone told me that the manager of the building kept a list of rooms that had ghost problems. I didn't believe that, but decided it was worth the risk of looking stupid to talk to someone about it. So I went to his office. Tom was a professional, friendly and a helpful guy. He also lived in the building and had been managing it for years. So I just asked him if there was a list of haunted rooms. Expecting him to laugh or be surprised or dispel the rumour, I was wrong. Very matter-of-factly, he just said, yes. I asked if my room was on it, and he said it was. He said that the former residents witnessed the bread fly off the fridge across the kitchen and hit someone on the head. Not the conversation I expected. Tom went on to say, you think that's bad? I have to be here when all of you are gone. And by myself, it's creepy. I, of course, asked what he'd seen or experienced, but he wouldn't tell me on which floor, though I had a good idea. But he did say, when I'm checking on the building and I'm in the back tower, the elevator will always stop on one particular floor. I've had it checked. There's no reason the elevator should do this, because no one is on that floor. The elevator doors open, and I hear two women scream, then a man screams, and then the elevator doors shut. Years later, I realized what he was experiencing was a residual, not a sentient, haunting. Which is, of course, still frightening, and at the time I was shook. Needless to say, it wasn't the most comforting discussion. But I did appreciate being validated. I also understood why he had so many Catholic artifacts at his front door. I started staying at my boyfriend's house more, and nothing happened at his place, that was great. But things still happened in my apartment. The one that would happen a lot would be me being awakened at dawn by what sounded like my roommate's alarm clock going off. I'd be laying in bed and clearly hear music coming from her side of the room, not from outside. As I would walk over to turn off the alarm, the music would die down to nothing. It was never the alarm. It also wasn't 90s music, more like 1920s or 30s music. I'm embarrassed to tell this part, because we were so stupid. But in case anyone needed another reason not to do these things, well, here it is. This is the part that will really sound dumb, because I can't believe I went back there. But I didn't make enough money to get a place off campus, so my second year I ended up living with some girls I really liked. They were super outgoing and fun, but they didn't make the best decisions. We were in an apartment that didn't have any activity, and they brought a Ouija board in. They asked me to join. I'd never messed with one and didn't really want to. But being 19 and naive, I didn't really think anything would actually happen. After all, it always ends up with someone just moving the glass, right? It's not real. Nothing ever happened in this apartment anyway. I'm literally rolling my eyes as I write this. Aside from, you know, having to say goodbye and not break the circle, both of which we botched, we didn't have a clue what we were doing. I had a guy come through who'd been our age, apparently. He said he'd come to the hotel to meet his uncle. His uncle was making a deal of some kind on one of the upper floors. Something went wrong, and he was shot. They dumped his body by our apartment door next to the service elevator. He asked us to leave flowers there. Then one of my roommates, Roz, started asking questions. It started off as the usual, what's your name? When did you die? Questions and answers. But then it kept going back and forth, A, Z, A, Z. Roz's whole demeanour changed. She got really angry and said, oh no, no you, you have to go right now, you do this every time. What the hell? Every time, I asked her, what are you talking about? You know what this is. Why didn't you say something before? She said, it's a negative entity that tries to hog the board that's bothered me in the past. All I could think was after that, just why? And why not say anything beforehand? She eventually got it to say goodbye, and after that we took a break. When they went back to the board, it just kept spelling, I got out. I got out. I thought they were messing with me. We had some drinks and we were watching a movie, trying to forget about what happened. One of them had put wind chimes in the living room a few months back. It was winter and all of the windows were shut. Only the radiator heat was on. So, naturally, we'd never heard these chimes. While we were watching the movie, the wind chimes started going like there was a breeze right in front of us. It was totally surreal. I remember just sitting there, trying to understand what I was seeing. They screamed, and we all slept in the same room that night. Hoping it was just a one-off, we went about our lives. But then smells started appearing immediately. Our place was really clean, but out of nowhere you would just smell rotting meat. We all experienced it. The day we sought help came when we were in my other roommate, Tasha, Civic. While driving, we all noticed that the rotten smell was in the car. When we started talking about it, the locks started freaking out. They started moving up and down way too fast to be done by the control panel. We all screamed. We went to a New Age bookstore and we told them what we did and got really scolded for it. They sent us home with sage and salt, and we followed all the instructions for cleansing the apartment and car. And after a few days, it finally began to feel normal again. Considering how dumb we'd been and how serious that thing can be, I'm amazed it worked. We got really lucky. I later told my grandparents about what had been going on in that building, and my grandpa, who lived in the city most of his life, said that hotel was an area that used to have a lot of mob activity in the 20s. Our city's second biggest economy back then was black market whiskey, and what came through the board that night would for me seem possible in that neighbourhood. He also said he had played with a Ouija board once. A message came through for him, about a relative none of the other kids knew. When he told his mum, she asked how he knew that, because it was true, though it was something he could never have known. For the latter part of my college years, my grandparents invited me to stay at their house. They had a big 1950s ranch. They hadn't moved since they bought it in bathing suits on the way to the beach in their 20s. I wish it was that easy now. Whatever was in that house must have been attached to the land, seeing that the house was new when they bought it, and it didn't line up with anyone they knew. My grandparents had always been incredibly kind to me. They were both makers and taught me how to do everything from sew clothes for raves to use any tool in their woodshop. At the time, I wanted to get a place downtown with my friends, but I felt really fortunate to have lived with them because we got to know each other really well. In regards to the spirit world, they never said anything to me about it. It wasn't until the event in their house occurred that I finally caved and asked them about it. I'm now glad that I know that they were both psychics too, and they knew about the house. It's common for kids to be afraid of the dark and basements, but I wasn't. I was horrified by planes, and I would dive under my parents' spider-laden porch to hide. I was also scared of dead birds. I would hide in our unfinished dank basement in the dark to win at hide-and-seek. My grandparents' house was my favourite place to go as a kid. They even had a pool table and a game room in the basement. My cousins and I all loved it. But even when I was little, that basement at the bottom of the stairs was just different. It always felt like someone was just looking up at you, and you didn't want to be down there alone. When I was young, I just thought it was me, and that maybe I was afraid of the dark. Now in my 20s, the feeling of someone always looking up at you from the bottom of my grandparents' stairs was just part of the deal. It never ceased being creepy, especially at night. I never brought it up, though, thinking it was just kid stuff. The first few months of living there were exactly as I expected. I'd set up my studio in the basement near my grandpa's workshop. We would be down there together working on our projects all the time, and it was really fun, but there would always be a shift in the vibe downstairs after my grandparents went to bed. And it would always feel like someone was watching over me. Not heavy or angry, but very much like you should be able to look over your shoulder and see someone. Things started to ramp up. I'm a deep sleeper. I've never had sleep paralysis or anything similar, but nothing like this has ever happened anywhere else to me but here, in my mum and aunt's old room. I started waking up in the middle of the night to the clear sensation of a hand running through my hair. It would scare the hell out of me. I'd be frozen. All I could do was lay there and in my head keep repeating some combination of what the F was that? Oh my God, just stop. And then it would stop, like it realized I was afraid. At first it was about once a week, then much more frequent. It happened a lot. It really freaked me out, but I could never tell who or what it was. But I could tell it was meant with kindness. But there was a ghost touching me, and that's a little too much, especially being awakened by it. I got into the habit of sleeping with my head under a blanket, something I especially dislike. Fortunately, it didn't peel that blanket back. The house was on a big piece of land and you never heard the neighbours. That's why when I woke up one day and heard two people talking, but couldn't make out what they were saying in the living room next to me, I assumed my grandparents were home. They weren't. There was no one outside either. In fact, as I left my room and walked towards the talking, it stopped. This also became more frequent. What finally got me to ask them about the house happened about 10 at night. I was working in the wood shop. My grandparents were watching TV in bed on the other side of the house. I was using a block plane on a table leg when I felt a cold spot move with the cadence of someone walking slowly into the wood shop around my table and stop. The cold spot then stayed still. I was afraid to put my hand out a little, and that's how I knew it was like a draft from a fridge, but still. The air conditioning wasn't on either. The strangest part of looking at where the cold spot was is every part of me was saying I should be seeing a person there. It was too much for me. I left the wood shop and I ran up the stairs. At breakfast the next morning, I finally laid it out, starting with, "Have you noticed there's a ghost there?" I was surprised. They were both completely unfazed by the question, like it was nothing, and said, "Yeah." My grandpa started with his experiences. When your great-grandpa was alive, he would come over and we would work in the woodshop. As he got older, he would have me go down the stairs first and put his hand on my shoulder for stability. After he died, there was a day where I was walking down those steps, and I was feeling sad and missing him, and a couple of steps in I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I knew who it was. I stood on the stairs still and smiled. I was just happy he was still around. I knew when I got to the bottom of the stairs it would stop, but I didn't want it to end. But it did. Though he's here a lot. He continued. A few things happened at their home too. He was really good at mechanical things. My mum had an antique clock on the wall in the living room, and it stopped working years ago and he couldn't fix it. A few days after his death, it just started working again. But the strangest part was the clock would have needed to at least have been wound, but nobody had wound it in years. And the clock always worked after that. My grandma added, I was in their basement getting things in order after he died, when I turned to walk up the stairs, and there he was, clearly standing at the top of them looking down at me, and then disappeared. When I told them what had been happening with my hair when I was asleep, they told me that he used to come in and check on me when I was little and do the same thing. So you're telling me I've been telling the spirits of my great-grandpa to fuck off on a nightly basis? I asked. Yeah, I think so, hon. But don't worry, he had a good sense of humour, my grandpa said, almost wincing. I couldn't help but crack up a bit. We got onto the topic of when we're ghosts, what we'll do as messages. To let each other know we're still there. My grandpa said that he would fix something of mine too and visit me in a dream. I agreed to do the same. My grandma made a joke about it instead. Years later, during the pandemic, my grandpa passed away from heart failure. I was incredibly sad because I couldn't fly home. When he was alive, he would always check my car to make sure it was safe. He would never want me to get stranded, which was really sweet. The driver's side window on my car hadn't worked in years. The week he died, it went down on its own. Much to my dismay, because I thought I'd have to wrestle it back up by hand again. But I didn't. It just worked, and I never had an issue with it again. And he's visited me in a couple of dreams. Not necessarily lucid dreams, I can't control them, but they're dreams that are detailed like a memory with logical emotion. He is dead in them, and he has shared messages with me. I brought it up to my mum what had been happening in their house. The voices that would stop when you opened the door and go into the living room. Apparently that used to happen to her and her sister when they had my room. The feeling of being watched, or that creepy feeling for no reason in the basement, despite it being full of toys when I was a kid. Well, that used to happen to her and her sister too. Her theory was that there was likely more than one ghost there. And while my great-grandpa might be checking in on me, and unintentionally scaring the hell out of me, she knew that there had been something else there since they moved in, when she was a little girl and he was alive. Years later, I mentioned it to my friend Jennifer LaPierre Stone, who happens to be a really talented psychic who's given readings for years. She's even worked with police to find missing people. Her impression was that before the house was ever built, there was a woman who lived in the area, possibly named Eleanor, who had two daughters. She had cognitive issues and died of tuberculosis. Once dead, she didn't stop looking for her kids. This kept her from transitioning. When the house was built and my family moved in, she believed my mother was one of her daughters. Eleanor stayed in their house as a protector. As for old lady ghosts that just want to lurk in the basement, Jennifer isn't sure what's up with that, but that it's very much a thing. The next time I came home after my granddad's death, I went downstairs and tried to talk with Eleanor, sharing what Jennifer had told me. I also tried to explain to her how long she'd been here watching everyone in this house grow up, and that if possible to try to follow the other spirits to get to her daughters. I thanked her for looking out for us, even though we usually just got really uncomfortable. Oh, and on one of my grandpa's dream messages, he said the house is haunted because there's a portal in the living room. Check it out. I'll show you how it works. I'd mentioned it to Mum, and the location of it resonated in a big way, explaining more experiences both she and her sister had had, including standing next to the record player, thinking their mum had put on a record and looking in to see that it was off, but the music was still coming out of the speakers, while there was no other music being played in the house as well. I told her what I'd try to do for Eleanor. In the months following, she added, my aunt stopped feeling someone staring at you from the bottom of the stairs, or watched in the basement hallway. And since, it's just like a normal house. Nikki. Well, Nikki, thank you so much for providing this week's experience for the Dark Paranormal. Now, Nikki's email also did include another additional few stories of her experiences, and we're going to use them for our next minisode. These, the ones initially you've just heard, all seem to wrap together nicely to form an episode of The Dark Paranormal. But Nikki's continuing saga of her psychic gifts will be on our very next minisode. And believe me, Nikki's continuing tales very much back up the sentiment of the size or length of your experience is not indicative of how terrifying it is. And so, until next time, when we will have our penultimate episode for season 19, please stay safe, take care, and remember, whenever you're discussing the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll catch you next week right here for our penultimate episode of season 19 of The Dark Paranormal.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
Are you ready for more independence as a financial advisor? Consider the RIA model. Schwab Advisor Services has helped thousands of advisors make the move. To find your path, start with Schwab at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths today.